Hello, everyone, and welcome into today's Irish NFL show with me, Colm Cronin, and I am delighted to be joined by a returning guest, a good friend of the show from The Ringer. It's Lindsay Jones. Lindsay, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm well, and I was laughing because every time that you join me on the Irish NFL show or to talk about the Broncos previous to that, we end up talking about the Broncos quarterback situation, and we are 20 minutes on from confirmation of something that has been very obvious since Russell Wilson was benched, even though Russ went on his PR tour last week and his house wasn't for sale. I guess this means it's officially on the market. The Broncos are moving on from Russell Wilson. Where to start with this, I suppose. Let me start here then with my question, and I'll ask you, am I being too cynical in thinking? George Payton came in. George Payton has presided over 3 losing seasons. He's presided over a head coach hiring Nathaniel Hackett that was an abject failure. Randy Gregory didn't work out. Frank Clark didn't work out. They overpaid Mike McGlinchey. And now, obviously, the biggest deal of all, Russell Wilson, and Russ is gone. George Payton remains in situ. Why is that? Is he at this point acting as a mudguard for Sean Payton for next year? Or what is the reason he's still in Denver, Lindsay?
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember back in January, I guess, when, you know, the hot seat starts, you know, the Black Mondays, who's going to be hired and fired. And the Broncos made it pretty clear pretty quickly that George Payton was going to be keeping his job. And the dynamics there have certainly changed. I mean, there was no question when George Payton was first hired that he was going to be in charge, right? That he was going to have a lot of power over the drafting, over free agency, over roster construction, all of those sorts of things. When Sean Payton came in, that dynamic changed a lot. So I do think this is now much more the Sean Payton show. The roster is being built the way that he wants to. Money is being spent the way that Sean Payton wants to. But it does lead to those really significant questions that you're asking about, like, what exactly is it that George Payton is doing here? You know, when he kind of came up, like, his reputation as, you know, as an evaluator, as an executive, was he was a really good, like, scout, really good talent evaluator, really good in the draft. That was kind of his role in Minnesota as well. And, you know, I think there have been times where he's drafted fairly well in Denver as well since he's been a GM. I think there certainly have been some misses. One of the problems is they don't have a lot of swing. They haven't been able to draft many players because of these poor moves in free agency that they've made. So, you know, I think there is, you know, that he's running the scouting department. I think there's a lot of that there. But yeah, I mean, he was the guy who executed that trade, and he was the GM when the contract was handed out by the new ownership group just a couple months later. So this really is his legacy here. And, you know, I think as long as he's going to stay, I mean, Sean Payton has a pretty long history of, like, working hand in hand with, you know, various executives. It was Jeff Ireland for a long time in New Orleans. And then there was, all, you know, obviously Mickey Loomis. They had a really, really long-standing relationship where, you know, the two of those guys worked together running the personnel department and all of that stuff. So I'm curious if maybe, like, as long as they get along, if George Payton has, you know, he's going to hang out here. But just in terms of, like, the results over the past couple of years, I mean, the results on the field have not been good, but the results in the offseason have been equally as bad.
Yeah, it is interesting to me because I was talking to Randy Mueller just a couple of weeks ago, and he had spent time with George in Miami. And he talked about, at that point, George wasn't focused on the draft at all. It was on the pro personnel side. Yeah. And it's the pro personnel side where George has struggled the most in Denver. So that would be certainly interesting. Now, on the Ringer side of things, Benjamin Solak and Sheil had done a podcast just the other day where they talked about, you know, how there could be a whole 60-minute podcast dedicated to the fact the Broncos are taking this massive dead cap hit. Is the number just so big that that's why it kind of is just kind of, we're at this point. Because if we go back to when Sean Payton started with the Saints, $85 million was your entire, you know, the whole cap. Yeah. And at this point, the Broncos are just going to eat it. And I suppose, like, what does it say that it's double what we have seen previously? And how much do you think it hinders what they can do next year? Because as I said, they haven't had the draft capital to have a lot of swings. They took some swings in last year's draft. It's not like they have huge draft capital to go up and get a QB in this year's draft if they really love one. Maybe they can. They mortgage the future again.
I just don't think, even if they wanted to, I don't think they can. I just don't think they have the capital to go from where they're at to get all the way up to one or two. And like, they're going to have to field a team. Like, they're going to have to build out the entire roster. You can't just keep giving away, you know, all of your draft picks. I mean, we saw, you know, the Rams are a weird situation, kind of a weird outlier in that last year they had this, you know, they had no, I'm trying to remember exactly how many it was in terms of like undrafted rookies that they had on their team in camp. It was something like 30 guys or something. Like, nobody knew their names. They had like tape on their helmets and, you know, running around with rosters because, you know, nobody, you know who anybody was, because they had kind of gotten themselves into some tricky financial situations given the trades that they had done, you know, going all in. For the Rams, though, they drafted really well. They found some late round stars, Puka Nacua, most notably, you know, fifth round pick. And they also won a Super Bowl. So like, it was worth it. I mean, the Broncos made these huge moves and haven't even sniffed the playoffs. So that's what's got to be really, really frustrating. If you're a Broncos fan and keep kind of like living through this endless carousel of quarterbacks and just won't stop spinning. And it's awful. I mean, I think it's going to make it really hard for them. They are going to do this as a June 1st cut, which is a mechanism that is in place that is going to allow them to spread this cap hit out over two off seasons. They're not going to have to take all $85 million in 2024. But what it's going to do is gives them, you know, two of the top five all-time dead cap hits just next year's in 2025. So for two straight years, they're going to be taking on this massive amount. I mean, the one silver lining, I suppose, is that the cap just keeps growing like exponentially. I mean, it's going to be $255 million in 2024. So, you know, the percentages of the cap and all that kind of stuff, but it is going to put them in a really tough spot. And the thing about a June 1st hit is that they have to carry that extra amount until June 1st. So, you know, George Payton said it last week at the combine, they're not going to be able to be aggressive in free agency, certainly not like they were last year. It's probably for the best that they don't replicate what they did in free agency last year. I don't think that worked out great for anybody except for Mike McGlinchey and his bank account, probably. I mean, it's going to make it really hard for them to attract top tier level free agents. I expect that they're going to be a team that is kind of shopping in that like bargain bin, second, third, later rounds of free agency when it's, you know, guys on 1 year deals, incentive laden type of contracts. Like, they're just not in a situation where they can be out spending a lot of money. And the hard part of that is that they're taking on all of this and they still don't know who their quarterback is going to be. Like, it's one thing to say, okay, we're taking on this massive cap hit because we have already acquired our quarterback. Like, they are doing this with this huge unknown of what they're walking into in terms of, you know, the draft, the free agent pool, all this sort of stuff. Like, you know, you're going to be paying that quarterback and you're going to be paying whoever you're going to be paying Russ and you're going to be paying whoever your next quarterback is. It's not great. It's bad all around.
It's kind of tangentially related to this. I'm wondering, like, We saw, I mentioned Russ's interview last week, right, where he's like, oh, I hope to be back in Denver. And we saw earlier today, the Jags wish happy birthday to a player. And a couple of hours later, he's getting cut. I'm thinking about the Jets spending the last couple of years talking up Zach Wilson, having Robert Saleh go to the podium week after week and say that Zach is our guy. He gives us the best chance to win. Then they bench him. Then they bring him back, and then they've got to go behind it again. Are we seeing more spin now than ever before, Lindsay, or are we just are you know, more aware of it because it's because of the social media and because there is a record of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the 24-hour news cycle, and that we're just like inundated with content all the time. You know, I think teams wishing guys happy birthday, like that sort of stuff, we're getting more of that because that's, you know, readily available. You know, 20 years ago, they weren't going to be like taking out an ad in the Jacksonville Times Union to wish a player happy birthday, anything like that. But yeah, I mean, I think this is lying season. We are fully here, but I think there's a lot of coaches who probably ascribe to that year round. And, you know, whatever the messaging is, what they're saying at the podium, you know, I always try to kind of follow the philosophy of follow their actions more so than what their words are and what they're saying. What are they actually doing? And, you know, if that's the case with Russell Wilson, certainly, where, you know, he might be sitting there with Brandon Marshall's podcast saying, I want to be here. I hope I win championships in Denver, when the actions are he's like having people tour his house, you know, to see all 15 bathrooms or whatever it is. Like, it might not be on Zillow, but you're out, you know, like we know what was happening, right? And the actions have been telling us since, you know, certainly since December, since right around Christmas when that benching happened. But I mean, you know, within the building, it was happening before then, when, you know, the actions were, you know, asking to take pay cuts and waive injury guarantees and all that kind of stuff. Like, we've known this was over, and now, you know, we're getting, you know, he's not officially released yet, but it's coming soon. Like, there's no more wondering when exactly this is going to happen. But in essence, we've known since the second that Russell Wilson was benched back in December.
Maybe on that piece about like actions rather than words, one of the things that Ben Solak wrote after the combine was, I suppose, about players continuing to kind of opt out. And I know Arif Hassan has written a piece, is the combine dying? With the, I suppose, just interested in your thoughts on that. You know, we're seeing, you know, so the QBs, the top prospects. And I'm wondering, like, is that a trend you think might continue, especially with the NIL money now that, you know, these guys are a little bit less dependent on the guaranteed fortune that the NFL brings, because they will have, and rightfully so, some money in the bank.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's been a question for a number of years now, even before kind of NIL became, you know, illegalized, about like, how do you get the top talent to participate in everything at the combine? Because this certainly isn't the first crop of quarterbacks that aren't participating. The Marvin Harrison Jr. kind of opting out of basically everything as well. I mean, he was in Indy, but he's not doing like the typical pre-draft prep. You know, I think it's really interesting that these couple of guys, I do think it's going to be something where, and this is what Ben Solak wrote about too, is that I don't think it's something that's ever going to apply to the whole, like to the collective group. I think for most prospects, they have way more to gain by going to Indy. But for these top group of guys who, you know, have not been beholden to the same system that NFL draft prospects have been forever, we're going to see them start to exert more of, you know, more of that leverage. And, you know, we're seeing this out of Caleb Williams about basically everything through this process. Kalen Kaler from The Athletic wrote a really interesting story last week as well about the way that Caleb Williams and notably his father are kind of questioning the status quo when it comes to just about everything. And, you know, I think the most important or notable thing was not that he didn't throw, it was that he didn't go through the medical process. And like, I get why he doesn't want, you know, 28 teams who aren't going to have a shot at him to have his medical information. He is going to have to go through MRIs at other places now, and multiple, and the whole reason that they do all the medicals at the combine is that you go through that exam one time and then everything is shared, so you're not getting like 32 potential doctors, you know, examining your knees and physical exams and everything that goes into a physical, plus all the MRIs and all of that kind of stuff. Everything's in one centralized database. But yeah, I mean, it's something that the league and the combine folks have been, you know, talking about kind of quietly for a while, is like, how do you improve this process? Because there's a lot of guys who don't like it. There's a lot of people within the league that find the process kind of like for lack gross for lack of a better term. Like, it's very dehumanizing. And you know, there have been problems for years about the way that the interviews are structured and kind of the whole like underwear Olympics of standing there, you know, getting weighed and measured. And so how do you, you know, how do you fix it? Is it incentivizing players to be there? Is it paying the prospects to get there, giving them stipends, better travel accommodations? Is there somebody, you know, I think as ESPN, there was a story today about like, is the 40 dead? Like, is the allure of the 40 dying because of all the GPS tracking? Like, teams don't need to watch a guy run a 40-yard dash to know if he's fast or not. They have a lot better ways that they can judge if a guy is football fast now because they're all wearing chips in their shoulder pads during their all of their college games. So, like, is there, you start, you know, the guy who's the fastest 40 from each position group gets $1 million. Yeah, I'm just throwing numbers out here off the top of my head. But, like, you know, I don't think it's I don't think it's dying yet, but I do think it is evolving, and the NFL is going to run into a big problem if it doesn't evolve with it and rapidly.
Every other way that the sport is growing and continues to grow, you look at, say, opening night at the Super Bowl, hosting that in the stadium, the record crowd, the sheer number of people watching it, the international growth. But the combine is the one piece, and it's the NFL. I'm sure they'll find some way to continue to have eyes on it. One of the things that we've seen over the past couple of years, so the owners got the 17th game. The players got the NFLPA report cards, which are entertaining, but do they really mean anything other than giving us some content?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think there were some actual tangible changes that were made with some organizations after the release of last year's report cards, just in terms of, like, you know, I think the Cardinals are no longer charging players for all of their meals, you know, that some of these type of things were like shame work. I think that's probably the lesson, is that, like, you know, some of these things that owners kind of had to be like publicly shamed into fixing. And I think the one thing that it did do was establish what is like a league standard in terms of like treatment. And, you know, I think it was maybe not the most fair way to like judge the owners based on like one. I think they got like one category, right? It was basically like, how willing are they to invest in facilities? And the Chiefs players, who were rightfully angry that they were promised a new locker room and didn't get it, were like, F-, like, done, you know? But I think there's probably a lot of other ways that the Hunt family has clearly done a pretty good job of like building their team and spending money in other ways. So I don't know if that was entirely indicative of like how good an ownership group is, but it did, you know, it has served its purpose in getting some of these like quality of life things improved upon. And, you know, I think the PA's plan for this was they wanted to give it. I think they were doing it in, they started it as like a service for their own members as a way to show like, this is what it's like if you're going to sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is what your wife and your children can expect about a game day situation. Because, like, these are things that you don't know. Like, you're not going to, there's no, like, database for these type of things. And what ended up happening is that the way that they presented it ended up being very fun for the rest of us, because we learned things about, like, the Jags having rats in their laundry baskets and somebody from the Broncos who just can't stop leaving his keys in his car and his car getting stolen, you know, all of, you know, these sorts of things. And it's definitely fun. I mean, it's probably the best usage of, like, I mean, the NFLPA fails in messaging a lot about in a lot of different ways, and this is one thing that they've managed to get right. And apparently my dogs agree, if you can hear them barking about it.
Well, one of the things that kind of came across very strongly was how the Raiders felt about Joshua Daniels, which, you know, again, as somebody who covered the Broncos, you know, wouldn't be no surprise.
No kidding, right? We could have told you.
Exactly. I suppose I'm wondering on that, like, you know, the fact that no lessons were learned there really by owners, because owners always know best. Do you think with Russ now, that not working out, with Deshaun Watson not working out, with Aaron Rodgers, well, let's see. Do you think that might give teams pause in terms of these big, big trades, or will owners always think, it won't be me, it didn't work out for those guys, but it's going to be different for me?
Yeah, it's funny. We're actually having this same conversation on my company Slack with a couple of the other editors just before we started recording, because it's really notable that three of the worst trades in NFL history have all happened in the last 3 years. The Deshaun Watson deal, obviously the Russell Wilson deal that we've just been talking about, and then the Trey Lance trade with San Francisco. Each had a different, like, each were bad for various reasons. I would still put the Deshaun Watson trade as the worst in that bunch because of how much money it was, how poorly Deshaun Watson has played since he arrived to Cleveland, but then because of all of the other stuff, just like, you know, how badly the Browns just sold their, you know, gave up all of their morals and, you know, the precedent they set for, you know, trading all of that and guaranteeing a contract for a guy who is in essence a, for lack of a better term, a sexual predator. I think that still is the worst one, but like, it's really interesting that they've been in the last 3 years and none of these have worked out. I mean, the Watson one is the only one left that, like, he's even still there and could conceivably, like, win his team some games. I think even if he ends up winning them some games, I still don't think it would ever, like, make it right what they did and could, you know, like, erase a lot of the really, really nasty elements of that deal. But yeah, so it makes me wonder, right? I mean, it works for the Rams, and that's kind of it, right? I mean, I think that we had Brady the year before, which wasn't a trade, but it was a team that believed they were in a Super Bowl window, signing a veteran quarterback who got them over the hump and won them a Super Bowl in the next year. Then we get Stafford a year after that, where they gave up a lot, they got the right guy in the right system, and you go and you win a Super Bowl right away. And so it made a lot of teams think we're just a quarterback away. And it certainly hasn't been a case for, you know, definitely wasn't the case in Denver. I don't think it's ever going to be the case in Cleveland as well. If I'm another team, I'm having some pause on it. Because I think there's a lot more examples of it not working out than it going well. I mean, you can even throw in Matt Ryan, right? I mean, the Matt Ryan trade, the Carson Wentz trade. I mean, the Colts just keep finding themselves in this, you know, in this mix. Or Washington also traded for Carson Wentz after the Russell Wilson deal didn't work out. You mentioned Aaron Rodgers, that one not working out so well so far. I mean, and some of those you didn't give up as much. It wasn't like mortgaging your entire future, but banking on the veteran trade market to save your franchise isn't quite as easy as the Rams made it look.
Yeah, the other one, I suppose, is the Bryce Young trade.
Yeah.
And on that, I mean, since Tepper has come in there, they've let Hassan Reddick walk. They decided they didn't want to do a deal with the Rams for Burns. Now they're not going to extend him. They let DJ Moore go in the trade for Bryce Young. There was Frank Reich. Like, an extension of that. Can David Tepper be saved from himself, or will he continue to meddle?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard, right? I mean, I think there were some reports. I'm trying to remember exactly where the reporting was, but late last season that it was like he's been really introspective and he's going to take a step back and thinking about the type of organization he wants to run and all that kind of stuff, and like, show me what I wrote. And I just say, I don't really care about the words. I want to see your actions. I want to like see you start running a functional organization and spending the money wisely and treating people well and, not meddling with the front office and the coaching staff and all of those sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, Dan Snyder is gone. Thank God the NFL is a better place without Dan Snyder in it. But David Tepper is making a run to be like the worst owner. I mean, I think there's probably a small group of guys that are now vying to take over that spot in the NFL. And, you know, you throw in that, you know, the failed practice facility that was like partially built and then abandoned in South Carolina. You know, I mean, there's just story after story of ways that, you know, David Tepper has failed and has been a really bad owner. His impatience with coaching is probably the top one. But yeah, I mean, what exactly was his involvement in the scouting of the quarterbacks last year, the decision to draft Bryce Young over CJ Stroud, which, you know, I think we're going to retcon that one forever, right? I mean, we're going to hear so many teams now talk about how much they love CJ Stroud with never actually showing us their boards and seeing where they actually have those guys ranked. But yeah, I mean, that one, if Bryce Young, like, it's too soon to completely write him off. I don't, you know, I think he entered a really, really bad situation, a really bad roster, a coaching staff that was not on the same page at all last year, poor ownership. So I still think it's too soon to write him completely off. But if his career doesn't, you know, go on an upward trajectory very quickly, that one will enter that mix for, you know, some of the worst trades, one of the worst trades ever.
You mentioned the company Slack earlier, and I'm wondering if you have had to do some counseling given that Jason Kelce announced his retirement, and yeah, obviously with Ben and Sheil, two huge Eagles fans there. I mean, it talk about kind of a whirlwind for the Eagles. Obviously, you know, they go to they win a Super Bowl, then everything falls apart, then they rebuild it, they go back to another Super Bowl, and then the wheels kind of really come off again. Nick Sirianni appears to be on the hottest of seats, and that in the league where Mike McCarthy is entering his final year, and yet Sirianni's seat seems even warmer. They've added in a sprinkle of Vic Fangio. We know how happy and smiley Vic is, and reports from Florida suggest nothing has changed there. Now with Kelce moving on as kind of the NFL's all-round kind of good guy, everybody loved Jason, just how are things going to be for Howie and the Eagles next year?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be one of the most interesting teams in the NFL next season, I think, because of all of those reasons that you just laid out in terms of like what's at stake for the most important people in that building, namely Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts. I mean, Jalen Hurts got his contract about a year ago. It was like late March, right? It was before the Lamar Jackson deal, if I recall. I'm getting my
name. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Because Lamar got his deal during the draft. It was like a couple hours before the first round kicked off. So, you know, he got his deal. Like, he has been paid now, and they failed in year one of how do you build this team around Jalen Hurts, now that you have a highly paid quarterback. It's certainly, the failure is not all on Jalen. I mean, I think he took a little bit of a step back last year than he did from the 2022 season, when he was, I think, second in the MVP voting and they made that run to the Super Bowl. But, you know, they're really going to have to figure out what their offensive identity is. And that was, I think, the biggest problem for them last year, is it seemed week to week that they didn't know who they were outside of being able to do the tush push, that they had the best short yardage play in football. And outside of that, it was really hard to rely on any one specific thing. Sometimes they wanted to run the ball. A lot of times they didn't want to run the ball, even though they were, you know, one of the best equipped teams to do so. You know, and I think they're very much a team in transition. When they made it to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, they did so with a very young quarterback, but a very old roster otherwise. Offensive line, a lot of the defensive leadership, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Darius Slay, you know, this core that are now all getting really old. And one of the things to watch that we talked about heading into 2023 was they're going to need more contributions from their young guys, from all of these Georgia guys that Howie Roseman has been drafting in recent years. And, you know, look, Jalen Carter was awesome for stretches of last season, and then he faded down the stretch. They're going to need him to be defensive player of the year caliber of a player if they want to get back to being an NFC contender. Like, he can't be a guy who's going to be going through growing pains in year two and year three. Like, he's going to have to be a stud every single week. But yeah, I mean, they're losing the most beloved player currently on the team, you know, Philadelphia's favorite player, the Swifties' favorite player. You know, my timeline today was basically nothing but like NFL people talking about Jason Kelce, and then a lot of like Swifties talking about, I watched, you know, I listened to Fearless in 2009, and now I'm crying watching a Philadelphia Eagles retirement press conference, what happened to me. So yeah, I mean, they're losing a lot. Football wise, look, he was an all pro last year. This is not like the, you know, he like limping away from football. He's leaving when I think he knew that his body couldn't do it any longer, but he was really good. And it's not just like, you know, philosophically who they're going to be. It's like, how are they actually going to play without him? Because they've been working on the touch pitch with other guys, but Jason Kelce is like the reason that that play works better in Philadelphia than anywhere else. So a lot of big questions for them. And yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if we're sitting here this time next year talking about like a whole new regime change for the Eagles.
Yeah, that will be interesting. I think the NFC East will be interesting, given to see what the Giants will do. Jerry has put himself in a situation where Dak is going to get paid one way or the other. Either Jerry makes him the highest paid quarterback in the league, or Dak gets to walk into free agency next year and picks up that contract. Finally, Lindsay, I'm just wondering, like, for you, is there something that, you know, captures your imagination for the offseason? Is there something in free agency? Is it the draft? What is it that what shoe are you waiting for to drop while we go through the desert of the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an especially interesting kind of quarterback carousel year. I mean, we probably say that every offseason. But, you know, for the first time in a while, it feels like there's a number of teams that have like real uncertainty at that position and like real needs to upgrade and not like a clear path to figuring out how to do so. So, yeah, we were talking about like, well, where does Russ land now? And it's like, okay, well, who needs a quarterback? So, and there's a bunch of teams that right now have an obvious quarterback need, and there's not that many good quarterbacks out there, right? This isn't like a super strong free agent class. You know, we could have, you know, but it's Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield are like the best available quarterbacks, and I guess now you throw Russell Wilson in that mix. It makes it really interesting to think of like, okay, well then who is going to get the top couple quarterbacks in this class? Is there going to be movement you know, at the very top of the draft with either Chicago or Washington? And then you have like, you know, cornerstone franchises that are in these, you know, pivotal moments, right? With New England at this completely, you know, new point in their history where they need a quarterback, they have a new coach, they have a new front office. What are they going to do at three? You know, I just think there's a lot of these kind of like pivot points when it comes to the quarterbacks that are really going to be make this offseason interesting. It might not be like the biggest, sexiest names. You know, we're not getting a Tom Brady on the move like we did 4 years ago. But there's just a lot of dominoes that could fall and a lot of like kind of interesting reshuffling of the quarterback landscape. That so that's what I'm, I think, most excited about heading into the next couple weeks.
Yeah, certainly it will be intriguing to see how it all plays out. Lindsay, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat to me. You do a great job at the Ringer between the written content that is put out there and also the podcast. And it's always fun when you drop in and either Nora and Stephen or to Ben and Sheila, or when you had all five of you together at one point and the chaos that ensued there. But thank you for joining me.
Well, spoiler alert, this evening. I'll be on the Ringer NFL feed a lot more often this offseason. So you'll get to hear more of the free agent takes, I think, over the next few weeks for sure.
Well, that is good to hear. And thanks again for joining me this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please do vote with your fingers and rate, review, or subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. Every click, every like, every positive review, and every additional subscriber makes a huge difference. It helps others to find the show, and we really do appreciate it. We'd also love to hear from you and to interact with NFL fans on our social channels, wherever you're listening in the world, so please do get in touch.